young black men dream of better lives while spending their days and nights beneath a street lamp. They are constantly on the lookout for the police, sleeping one at a time while the other keeps watch, and with good reason. At times, the dialogue is cut abruptly as the two men throw their hands in the air, set lights going dark except for a pair of headlights. Sometimes it's nothing, other times it isn't. Throughout the play, Moses and Kitch are visited by only two other characters, a white man repeating refrains of gosh, golly, gee, and a brutal, sadistic police officer. In her new play, Pass Over, running through July 15th, Lincoln Center's Clairton Theater, Antoinette Nwandu explores the daily lives of Moses and Kitch, played by John Michael Hill and Namir Smallwood, and I am delighted they could all join us today. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So it's clear that there are multiple different levels of storytelling at work in the script and in the performances. But I'm curious to hear from each of you, what do you think the main story of the play is telling, or what is the main takeaway you would give each audience member if you could give them one?
I think for me, the main story is one of a deepening and maturing friendship between two young African-American men that unfortunately is cut short. Mm-hmm. by the system into which they were born.
John?
I was going to talk about friendship as well, and with Moses's character, it's about being a leader and what that means and stepping into your own destiny.
And Amir, something for you?
For me, the whole play is about friendship and brotherhood, and how when one thing happens to one brother, it affects the other brother, you know, forever. And I think that's my takeaway from it.
Sort of the humanizing of these individuals and the community that they share, yeah. Antoinette, when did you start drafting this script, and what compelled you to write this story?
I mean, I started writing this play late 2013, early 2014. I had my first public reading in actually June of 2014 was my first public reading of a first draft that is actually was very different than what the play is now. So it continued to grow and develop. And at the time, I was teaching full-time at the Borough of Manhattan Community College. I was also, as was everyone, it seemed, following the news of sort of increasing and escalating violence and state-sanctioned murders against young black men, specifically by the police. Though the one that sort of caught my attention was actually by a citizen. It was
George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman. And so seeing that nationally and then going to school and teaching young men who fit that demographic really sort of got me angry in a way that I couldn't just dismiss, and just a feeling that I needed to both make art about this, but also it was like sort of a public outcry for me.
John and Amir, it's clear that your characters are really close. A lot of the play is dialogue between the two of you, dialogue that is really sincere. How did you start to develop that onstage relationship?
It's probably a longer journey than it would seem. We did a play together a long time ago at Steppenwolf Theater, and he had just gotten to Chicago and was this sort of bright light. I remember the director falling in love with him and everybody else being amazed at it. When you get a really good dance partner in the room with such good material, that the chemistry people talk about, that sort of just happens when two people care about the piece a lot and want to give it their all, and that's what I feel about Namir.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way about John. I mean, it was very easy. When you have great material and you just have two people, three people who just care about the work, you know, there's no ego or anything like that. It's just tell a story. It makes everything completely easy.
And he makes me laugh a lot, too. That helps.
And tell me about the shoot me now remark. What is that all about? And contextualize that for our listeners.
Kill me now is really...
Kill me now.
Really a confounding thing, because it's something that they're always expecting. It's not something that you would normally bring on yourself, but I think it takes on a lot of different meanings. There's a times where he can use it to call Kitch to his attention. There's times where it's an exclamation waking up from a nightmare. Mm-hmm. but then it's also a surrender in one of the final confrontations with the police officer. So I think it lives in a lot of different spaces.
John, you mentioned Moses as a leader. How do you think Moses handles the responsibility of being a leader?
Not well most of the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part of the journey of maturity that, you know, when he finally steps into his role, it's because something is happening to his brother, Kitch, his friend here. And but for most of the play, I think that's what's part of the struggle. He's trying to be a good leader, trying to have ideas, but they're not fully formed. They keep being interrupted. And I think that's the joy of drama. You're watching your heroes struggle against something.
Namir, why do you think Moses could ever leave Kitch behind? Are there ways in which Kitch is stronger, the stronger of the two?
I personally think that Kitch is like an amalgamation of a whole bunch of things. Like, he's the follower, he's the protector, he's the leader, but he's also like the friend, the fierce friend, you know? And he needs Moses, and I feel like they both need each other to function, to take on, you know, what's going on in their environment and to be able to survive it. They need each other.
The show material says that the era is present day, but also the slavery era and also the period of Hebrew enslavement in Egypt. What's meant by that?
I mean, for this play, for a lot of the plays I write, but for this play, it's sort of, I try to create the play as though it were a Photoshop image, so that there are many, many layers happening. And that's something that we talked about a lot in rehearsal, that the play exists now. But one of the things that I think raises or elevates the story from just a ripped from the headlines kind of thing, which is not really my cup of tea, to something that's a bit more epic and that's a bit deeper, is when you realize in a very intentional way those other layers, that this is a story that could unfortunately have happened in the 1850s, and it could have happened. You know, they are at once young men on the block, but also Israelites in the wilderness of Egypt.
I'm D.W. Gibson, speaking with Antoinette Nwandu, John Michael Hill, and Namir Smallwood about the new play, the new production of Passover. Antoinette, Gabriel Ebert plays Mister, a white man in full khaki suit who stumbles upon Moses and Kitch on their block after losing his way to his mother house, sort of like a Little Red Riding Hood sort of feel to it. The two are apprehensive about his being there, but he insists he stay and provide them a meal. Why does he insist so fervently?
I think because Gabe Ebert, who portrays that role, again, really beautifully and with just a real sense of egolessness as well, he is portraying someone who I think represents the spirit of America, which is at first, I think, very welcoming and very abundant. And so I think there's some part of him that is fueled in part by some part of Mister that's fueled in part by guilt, but fueled in part by a certain desire about who he is in the world. He's a character who never curses and who's floored by the words that Moses and Kitch use very freely. And so I think he's trying to be what he thinks is a good person by sharing his bounty.
Yeah, he has a very strong reaction to, and there's a conversation about the use of the N-word. Is that a conversation that either of you have ever had? Did that sort of ring true to any experiences you've had?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Think about it for a minute. No pondering required. Commonplace.
It's funny. There's a chill that goes over the room when the conversation actually starts. And it's always fascinating to me because I'm like, yeah, this is exactly how it goes a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Why does his cherry mood turn so angry so quickly? That is Mister.
I think because his worldview is challenged, to say it without giving away. Come see the play. His worldview is challenged in a way that makes him very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And doesn't matter whatever golly gee attitude he throws at it, it's about that discomfort and the fact that he hasn't been living beyond his own nose, right?
Mm-hmm.
John, Gabriel plays the police officer, as we said, who harasses Moses and Kitch throughout the play. Does he do it out of hatred or ignorance or what or both? Or
Oh man, that's gonna be hard to answer without giving away some stuff that happens later on. But I do think it's a lot of things. There's definitely ignorance in it, but you can't get to that until you let go of some of the hatred. So I think there's a lot going on down deep down inside that allows him to be so hateful towards these guys and to maintain the status quo. And it's all condensed into this play, but I do believe there are systems in place that are doing exactly what he does.
Right.
In a less overt ways.
Well, and it seems somehow vital that he's playing both parts of Mr. and Officer, Antoinette. Tell us about what went through your mind in drawing up the character of Officer in particular. What's at the heart of that character for you?
Yeah, so the character, even though they never actually say his name, it's Ossifer.
No. You actually looked at that in the program, but it is Ossifer,
So he the reason that one actor plays both Mr. and Ossifer is to sort of highlight the systemic and the relational nature between this person who is very genteel and this system. So, you know, Mr. exists in the world because Ossifer exists in the world, and Ossifer can keep peace so that Mr. can continue to enjoy the bounty and the promised land that he has. And just to go back to that other question, I think for me at least, Ossifer is really just about power, about maintaining power at all costs.
Yeah, and to me it seemed vital that both those characters work in tandem like that.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. One leaves, the other one comes. One leaves, the other one comes. And it's like, oi.
Namir, there's a scene where Kitch lists the names of all the men killed by police that he and Moses knew. Are those lines difficult to deliver?
No, they're not difficult to deliver. It's not difficult because it's the reality of a lot of people, a lot of young men, you know. Someone came to the show and said that, yeah, when you listed the names, you know, I was those guys, you know. I knew guys like that, either dead or in jail, you know, my friends, people that I grew up with, you know. And this guy had to have been in his 50s. So you talk about how this keeps perpetuating, how it's been perpetuated throughout history, you know?
Yeah. Antoinette, what are you trying to express in those lines? I mean, it's a long list. Moses begins speaking, thinking it over, and then he's cut off by Kitch listing a few more names.
Yeah, I think what it expresses is just the reality of their situation. On a certain level, they are isolated, they're alone. But just to sort of people the space with the men that they've known and the men who have been killed. And we talk about in the play, the sense of a plague as well. If you're familiar with the biblical story, the fact that it seems intentional and it seems that a class of people, a race of people, a group of people of a specific demographic are being taken out, are being exterminated sort of right under their noses. So I think they're aware of that. And they're sort of, it's like an elegy to those men who are gone.
Without giving too much of the ending away, because it is quite something to experience, do you think these men make it off the block? Do they pass over? I want to ask that question to all of you. Antoinette, maybe first?
I think they definitely pass. Yeah, I know for certain that they pass over. We talked a lot about that there are different ways to pass over, and one of those ways is spiritually or emotionally. And so, yeah, without giving too much away, that happens. I mean, I'm going to give that away. That happens.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, after I've cleared my mind, after my heart is different, after I am different and changed internally, then I can move my body to a new space.
How do you see it, John?
The same. It's mostly about identity. There's an internal struggle that kind of supersedes even the physical struggle that they've been dealing with in the play.
Yeah. And Amir, with Antoinette, with what she said there, it seems like we can draw a line of distinction even between sort of the possibility of passing over and getting off the block.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's for me, it's mental. You know, it's all about mentality. You know, so a man thinketh, so he is. So if you think that you can escape your circumstances, that's the first step. Then, you know, once you think it, you can believe it, and then you can actually achieve it. So that's what I think.
Well, what I think is that you guys have achieved a wonderful production, and I'm so grateful that you've come here to join me today.
Thank you so much.
I'm D.W. Gibson. I've been thinking with John. I've been speaking and thinking with John Michael Hill, Namira Smallwood, and playwright Antoinette Nwandu discussing the new production of Passover.